Gordon. All right, ladies and gentlemen, joining me now as my guest is Mr. Peter Jenny. He grew up in Washington, D.C. during the Cold War era of the 1950s and 1960s. His father was Wistar Jenny, who was a senior career CIA official, and the family was intimately involved with many of Washington's social and political elite. That included the family of Mary and Cord Meyer, as well as other high-ranking CIA officials such as Richard Helms, James Jesus Angleton, Tracy Barnes, Desmond Fitzgerald, and William Colby. He's a graduate of Princeton, earned a doctoral degree in psychology at Boston University. He's been a practicing psychologist and consultant in Massachusetts for over 30 years. And in 2002, he completed an MBA degree at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business, and he is the author, this is of his first book, a book called Mary's Mosaic, The CIA Conspiracy to Murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and Their Vision for World Peace. And Mr. Jenny, welcome to the program. Thank you for sharing your time with us, sir.
Good afternoon, Gordon. It's great to be with you.
Now, the subtitle of your book, Mary's Mosaic, is The CIA Conspiracy to Murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and Their Vision for World Peace. With that vision for world peace, are you referring to the secret partnership between John Fitzgerald Kennedy and Nikita Khrushchev to try to bring about world peace? Is that what you mean?
That's definitely part of. I think what most people don't realize, because it's only recently come out in the last couple of years, that Kennedy and Khrushchev were having kind of a secret relationship, and both of them, actually the relationship began at Khrushchev's behest, and he wrote a letter to Kennedy that was sort of smuggled to him, that he didn't want anyone else to see. And in that letter precipitated a relationship, a kind of pen pal relationship that the two started having behind all the facades of government and media, that kind of thing. And you know, Khrushchev made it really clear that, you know, he was a very peace-loving person, and he thought this Cold War thing was just sheer, utter madness. And particularly after the Cuban Missile Crisis, the two really came together and began to work together in a way that they hadn't before to keep this kind of thing from ever happening again.
Well, now, the conventional wisdom, of course, is the vision of Khrushchev, you know, the shoe-pounding person who
right.
was believed to have taken the measure of JFK and found him to be weak, etc.
Right.
You think that that's incorrect?
Well, I think, yes, I do. On one level, I do think it's incorrect. I mean, I think at that, you know, there was a lot of Cold War posturing going on, and I think, you know, the Russians were as frightened of the United States as the United States was Russia. And so there was a lot of sort of machismo bravado going on, you know, that really created essentially a false illusion, ultimately.
I see. Now, the dust jacket of your book shows a photograph of the body of Mary Pinchot Meyer. I think her face is covered by some paper or something, and surrounded by police and investigators.
Correct.
But before this was even called in and these people came out, weren't there some phone calls, important phone calls that were made?
Yes, there were, in fact. There was a tow truck that came to the scene before the murder occurred, exactly less than a minute before the murder occurred. And I maintain in my book that this was an orchestrated murder, an orchestrated assassination on the part of certain elements within the Central Intelligence Agency to create this illusion that Mary would be murdered in a random act of violence by what would appear to be a lone gunman who was arrested within 45 minutes later. He was a sort of downtrodden African-American male who just happened to be in the area. There was never any forensic evidence connecting him to Mary Meyer or the murder scene.
They never found the gun either, did they?
They never found the gun. It was never found.
Yeah, and he was tried and found to be not guilty.
That's correct. He was
fine African-American female attorney, as I recall.
Yes, Dovie Rowntree. She became a legend in Washington as an African-American woman who came on the legal scene in Washington, and there's been a book written about her as well called Justice Older Than the Law by Dovie herself and her co-writer, Katie McCabe, and that too is a wonderful book. And there's a chapter in that book about her defense of Ray Crump, and Mrs. Rowntree emerges from the trial convinced that her client had been railroaded, that's what the government was trying to do. But through her very competent legal work, she convinced the jury that there was just no evidence to really support Ray Crump's guilt.
Yeah. Now, Mr. Jenny, was there sort of a small cabal inside the CIA who objected to this liaison between Khrushchev and JFK and sort of went rogue?
Well, this cabal within the CIA, I maintain, is the same cabal that orchestrated the JFK assassination in Dallas. And the reason for that is that President Kennedy was really infuriated with the CIA. He felt that they had lured him into the Bay of Pigs fiasco, and had he not stood up and said, no, I will not cooperate with this, I will not call in air support, of course, the mission became a complete and utter failure, and Kennedy, in a very responsible way, took responsibility for it. But he was seething underneath as to, you know, how he had been manipulated by Alan Dulles into this position. And of course, he fired Alan Dulles and his chief lieutenant, Richard Bissell, shortly after the Bay of Pigs fiasco. But Kennedy, when he would be reelected in 1964, had really told his inner circle that he wanted to neuter the CIA. He certainly wanted to end the Vietnam War. I think there's a mounting evidence that clearly shows that Kennedy thought this was one of the worst blunders he had made and one of the worst blunders in American foreign policy to get, you know, tied up in some kind of crazy war in Southeast Asia with this sort of monolithic communism that everyone wanted to believe existed, when in fact it really didn't. And Kennedy was also, you know, wanted to have a rapprochement with Fidel Castro with regard to Cuba. You know, he wanted to, in a sense, turn away from the Cold War and begin engineering his administration toward the pursuit of world peace. And so in September of 1963, the United States Senate ratifies the first limited nuclear arms treaty. And this was really a signal to the world, and something that he and Khrushchev really wanted to take place, of where his administration was now going to be headed. He came in as a cold warrior, for sure, But by the end of 1963, he had really turned his entire political trajectory toward world peace.
Well, now, I'm mentioned in your book,
yes,
Mary's Mosaic, and so, of course, is Howard Hunt. I was very close with Hunt, the late Howard Hunt, and he told me, vis-a-vis the business of the Bay of Pigs, that JFK was blackmailed, if you will, by Adlai Stevenson, who said that if he provided the, you know, the air support and what have you that was being called for, that he, Stevenson, would go before the UN and tell them that those were American pilots and not Cubans. I don't know whether it's true or not, but that's what Hunt told me.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I think Howard Hunt is a fascinating individual, Gordon. I don't always know how much of what he says is actually accurate, but, you know, I do believe, due to the work of the attorney Mark Lane, that Howard Hunt was exposed to be in Dallas on the day of the assassination. And in this trial against Liberty Lobby, it was a libel suit in I think, 1985. The trial ended with Hunt being completely exposed as one of the paymasters in Dallas. And but the media completely went silent on the result of this trial. It was just buried as quickly as the verdict came out. And it was one of the only trials in American history, since Kennedy's assassination, where the jury, the foreman of the trial, came out and said, you know, that it's clear that the Central Intelligence Agency orchestrated the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mr. Janney, we need to take a pause for the benefit of our advertisers. If you'd be kind enough to stand by for a few moments, we'll get that taken care of, and I'll be right back to you discussing your book, Mary's Mosaic, The CIA Conspiracy to Murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinko Meyer, and Their Vision for World Peace. I'm back with my very special guest, Mr. Peter Janney, the author of Mary's Mosaic, The CIA Conspiracy to Murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and Their Vision for World Peace. And the late Mike Wallace told me that CBS, I guess it was, had expended a fair sum of money at Bell Labs trying to, they had some sort of a photograph that they thought showed me on the grassy knoll, and that they were not able to, that his Bell Labs was not able to identify me there. And I just want everybody to understand that I was not on the grassy knoll, but I was in New York at the time and can prove it. And nor was I the shooter on the Mary Pinchot Meyer hit. Just for the record, I just want to...
I don't think anyone has ever alleged that you were, Gordon, have they?
Well, on the grassy knoll, yes, lots
yeah.
of times.
Right.
But not with respect to Mary Pinchot Meyer, although I did discuss it with Timothy Leary. He's also in your book.
Yes. Well, the reason you came into my book, that I mentioned you, was that you did a what might be called a historic raid on Leary's Millbrook compound, correct?
Twice.
And part of my mention of you in that reference has to do with the fact that there appears to be a lot of commotion going on at Millbrook at the time of the trial of Ray Crump's murder trial, which was 9 months after Mary Pinchot Meyer's murder in October of 64. So in July of 1965, you know, you have one of the biggest trials ever to take place in Washington, D.C. And there's some speculation I raise about the fact that you know, the government didn't want Tim Leary coming down to that trial and making any kind of spectacle of it. So there could have been an uptick of, you know, interference at Bill Millbrook at that time, which I think the following year culminated in your first raid. Correct me if I'm wrong, 1966?
Yeah, I think that was about when it was.
Right.
But Timothy Leary was definitely capable of creating a spectacle.
Yes.
Oh, my. Well, in any event, in your book, Mary's Mosaic, you indicate your belief that your own father was at least peripherally involved.
That's correct. I believe that my father was part of this conspiracy in the sense that at a very specific time, he called his friend Ben Bradley and alerted him to the possibility that, and the story was that my father was listening to his radio at his CIA office, and he called Ben Bradley shortly after lunch, and he said, "Ben, are you listening to the radio?" And Ben said, "No, Wister, why would I be listening to the radio? I'm at work." And he said, "Well, there's been a bulletin of a woman having been shot down on the towpath, and I wondered whether you knew where Mary was." Now, it appears to be a very kind of innocent call, but for Bradley, it set off, according to what he wrote, a number of alarm bells, where he rushed home and, you know, started to, I guess, make preparations. We don't know, and Mr. Bradley couldn't really tell me all that much about it because he couldn't remember. But at the trial, Mr. Bradley testifies and says that it wasn't until almost 6 o'clock when Sergeant Sam Wallace showed up at his house.
And Jenny, unfortunately, we've run out of time.
Okay.
Just enough to thank you for being my guest and to recommend Mary's Mosaic.
Great to be with you, Gordon. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jenny.